Auburn's gonna win the football game!
Don't miss a thing from the world of college football. Stay right here for College Gridiron on WFUV Sports.
To our WFUV studios here on the Rose Hill campus. A bit of a different crew with you for this week six show. I got Will Jing with me and George Fugatakis. How are we doing today, boys?
All's really good. Can't complain.
Yeah. I'm really tired, but you know, I've just not been getting the most amount of sleep this past week. But I'm really pumped to be on this podcast because I asked Lou to be on here because I don't know, that Georgia Bama game was crazy.
Yeah, it's been one of those longer weeks, I gotta say. Georgia Bama, Miami, Virginia Tech even feels like a year and a half ago, but it was just last week. We got a little bit of college football today. Today we'll be reviewing, recapping a little bit of some of those exciting games from last week. We'll talk a little bit of Heisman, talk a little bit of who our personal top five are, what we've seen so far through 6 weeks or 5 weeks of the season. Then we'll give you a little bit of preview of this week six slate. Some interesting games, some fun games, a lot of maybe not so great games in the slate. We'll talk about the good ones. And then we'll close it out with a little bit of our super dogs. You know, I know all of y'all love those underdogs. So we'll give you a couple of ours that we like a little bit this week. But so we'll start it off with a little bit of the game of the week, the game of the year, the game of the last five, maybe the game of the century. Incredible game, Georgia versus Bama. What are some hot takes? Some things that stood out. What did y'all see? What did y'all see last weekend?
I mean, I read this take on I think it was Fox Sports or Bleacher Report or something yesterday. There was this thing, this article that popped up in my notifications on my phone, and it said that this person felt better about Georgia coming out of the game than Alabama.
Yeah, that was a crazy take. I saw it too. That was an insane
honestly,
take.
I agree, because Georgia was showing life in the second half in a way they didn't in the second half. They outscored Bama by a lot to come back, obviously, and to me, that's just like
27-11 in the second half.
So they figured it out basically with Alabama, and I'm sure, you know, if they meet again down the road, which is possible, whether it's SEC title game, which is going to be tough to get to for Georgia at this point, or whether it's in the playoffs, you know, I'm sure Alabama's going to make adjustments, but it shows that Georgia does know how to figure things out. Alabama did show some weakness in their secondary, especially in the second half, so I think that is a point of concern, especially when, you know, Georgia was just absolutely garbage. I like in the first half, like there's no way around that. And I think that if Alabama remains having weaknesses, you know, going on for the rest of the season, then it's very possible that another team is going to be able to exploit that down the road, whether again it's an SEC title game, whether it's later in the season, or whether it's the playoffs.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting take in that you feel better. I feel like Bama, it was a home game for Bama, yes. But they came in with something to prove, to say, hey, we know Saban's gone. This is a new era, but we're still the same Bama. And so winning the game at the end of the day in that scenario was all that mattered, even if it was a home game. Maybe it didn't end up being the prettiest in the second half. But you saw some flashes on the offense. You obviously found and showed to the world that Ryan Williams is a superstar. I'm not going to say that I'm down on Georgia or anything, because I still think they're arguably the best team in the country, even with that loss. And I could see an argument for them being ranked as high as two. I just, to say that you're higher on Georgia after that game than you are on Bama because of what you saw on the field, I just don't see it.
No, I guess you kind of misinterpreted me. I'm not necessarily higher on Georgia than I am on Alabama, but I think I just feel more... if I'm a Georgia fan, I feel a little bit more relieved than if I'm an Alabama fan. But I still feel like after the game, Alabama does have the leg up.
I don't see that, no. The weakest thing that I've seen for Georgia was that D-line. They didn't sack Jaden Milroe once. Then Alabama's O-line was much, much stronger. The defense, in my opinion, they came out strong. They had three picks. I don't see a real challenging upside for Georgia here. I do agree that comeback towards the end of the game, that was great, but then the play calling failed a little bit, and it just led to a loss in general. Like I don't see a real upside for Georgia here.
No, it's an interesting take, and I would agree with you that Alabama offensive line looked very good. The Georgia defensive line kind of come out of that game a little bit, And that is probably another reason why I'm a little bit higher on Bama than I was coming into the game. And I was quite high on Bama because I think Kalen DeBoer is arguably the best coach in the country, is because this Georgia defensive line is not what it's been in the past. They obviously still have some incredible stud players, but when you're not able to get pressure on a guy like Jalen Milroe and he has all day to throw, it's just there's not really a scenario in which Jalen Milroe doesn't win that game if he has time to throw the football.
Yeah, I agree completely, especially if he's throwing to people like Ryan Williams who aren't going to drop the ball and can go for 200 yards a game. I don't see how Georgia can compete for a title with that.
Yeah, Ryan
I didn't say Georgia's competing for a title. I did not say that.
I still think they're a top three team in the country.
Oh, no. I'm going to disagree with you there. And I think, honestly, after this game, because I was actually talking to someone at Clinton Hall about this after the game, and I think Georgia's going to have a hard time getting above an 8 seed this year. Because think about it. Ohio State, Texas, Alabama are all virtually guaranteed to be on top of them, right?
Well, Bama, they still have to win. It's the SEC champion. So, like, hypothetically, it could be like Missouri gets the one seed, gets that seed because yeah. It's just the SEC champion.
Yeah, but Georgia is already basically, listen, Georgia still has to play on the road against Texas, Ole Miss, and Tennessee.
Only one of those I'm very scared about for them.
I think they're definitely going to lose one, I think, and possibly two. If you lose even one, listen, Alabama already has, Alabama already has the leg up because they're probably not going to, even if they lose two games from here, they're still going to have the leg up because of the tiebreaker that they won. And Texas doesn't really get much of a challenge other than Georgia, and I don't even know if you call Oklahoma a challenge to Texas. So I really see them ending the season with only one win, meaning I think at this point you can already lock in the SEC title game as two of three teams, that being Texas, Alabama, and Tennessee. Georgia is already out of that picture. Now, you already have those three teams, plus you have Miami, Ohio State, right? And then you have a Big 12 champion that's going to be ahead of them. And then probably you can throw in, you know, I don't know if Oregon, Penn State, or whichever of those teams, right? But somebody I think is also going to probably sneak in, given the fact that Georgia already almost lost to Kentucky. And that's, even though Kentucky did manage to beat Ole Miss, that is a bad look.
I think Kentucky is a significantly better team than people are giving them credit for. I know that they don't play pretty games by any means, but they're a better team than people are giving them credit for. Additionally, I think it's hard to say that you can, if we're saying that it's between Tennessee, Texas, and Georgia as that second team in the SEC, I don't, because they all have to play each other. Like, there, it's going to be another team in the SEC, like Missouri, or like Ole Miss, who really doesn't have that much comp in the rest, has a weaker schedule through the SEC that's going to make it.
Texas has a really weak schedule.
Yeah, but either Georgia or one, they're going to lose one of Georgia, Oklahoma, or A&M. A&M and Oklahoma, not because they're better teams, but because of the rivalry, and they're just not going to win both.
I absolutely don't see them losing any of those. I mean, maybe against Georgia, but not A&M and not Oklahoma, that's for sure. Those aren't even tests to Texas this year.
I think that's a crazy take to say they're not even tests, because they lost Oklahoma last year.
Oklahoma's
last
weak.
Year. That's last year.
Even though they're ranked 19th, I don't see they're weak.
And wasn't Dylan Gabriel their QB last year?
Yeah.
So they lost their QB. I mean, they got taken out by Tennessee. You know, and I
think you're underrating how much rivalries mean in college football. Like, you can't say that any rivalry isn't a test, especially when both of those games are played as road games.
It's a test mentally. I don't think it's a test on the field.
I mean, that doesn't.
That is half the, like just to put devil's advocate, that is half the game. Half the game
they
is mental,
both,
half the game is
they
physical.
Play both. They have to
yeah,
play
but
both
I'm saying that's not
going to
be enough.
Road.
No, not going to be enough at all. But it's still going to take a little bit. It's going to be taken into account a little bit.
But I wouldn't call it a test for the team that's been number one for the past 2 weeks and now is number two. I wouldn't say that's a test.
I think it's also that Texas hasn't been tested at all this year. They haven't really played anyone.
That's true. And Michigan, so,
Michigan isn't good. Michigan doesn't have a quarterback. Like, that's what you have
that's
to.
That's true.
You have to put, I think Texas is a very good team, but you have to put it into the perspective of currently they're starting a freshman quarterback. Their starting quarterback is injured, and they haven't really played anyone. They haven't played a true SEC test yet because Mississippi State is the worst team in the SEC this year. by a significant margin. And until they play a somewhat competitive SEC team, I'm not ready to say that Texas is a world beater, best the SEC team. I think Bama, I think Georgia, I think Tennessee, I think even arguably Missouri are all teams that are competitive with them. Ole Miss even are teams that can be competitive and give them a run for their money. And so I also don't like chalking up the SEC, especially in a world without divisions, to it's Alabama and everyone else, because if Alabama drops one game somewhere, because it's college football and there's always a game you can drop somewhere, and you know, any given Saturday, right? And so it's too early to chalk up saying, you know, Georgia's going to be an 8 seed, is what you said. I don't think you can say that already this far.
I'm saying that. Well, that's my hot take. I'm saying I don't think they're going to end up higher than an 8 seed.
Yeah, I think it's way too early, first of all, to say that. And I think it's also with what is left. Because if Georgia beats Texas and then wins the SEC, or even if they lose in the SEC title game, they're a 6 seed if they beat Texas.
That's...
Because
I can see that. But the thing is, they could lose. You forgot about Tennessee and Ole Miss. Those are also challenges that they could lose. Those are also
those games.
I mean, I don't know if Ole Miss is still a top 10 team.
They're not.
Ole Miss isn't top 10 anymore.
Okay, but Tennessee is going to be a challenge. To see Georgia beating both Texas and Tennessee after, I know we said Kentucky's underrated, but almost losing to Kentucky and losing to Alabama the way they played in that first half. I mean, the second half they got it together. But the first half is like, listen, there's some holes in this team.
Most definitely.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we're gonna move from that Georgia Bama game to a game that happened a little bit earlier in the weekend, and talk about Miami versus Virginia Tech. More specifically, the last about 3 seconds of that game. I'm interested to hear y'all's opinion on this, but I don't understand how as a referee, you can call a catch on the field and then go into a 15-minute review and watch what we saw and then say it wasn't a catch. And just some interesting officiating, we'll say.
100%. I believe that fully. How can you switch the call like that when we got similar angles?
Yeah.
And from the angles that the TV saw, it was pretty clear that it was a catch, or at least there was not enough to overturn it.
Well, yeah, we'll start with this. Do y'all both think it was a catch?
See, it's when I was watching the game on the TV, I did not get a good angle of it. I'm just gonna be honest. I'm pretty sure the refs had better angles than we did, because they look at different things than is shown on the TV. But based off of what I saw on the TV, there just wasn't any clear detail of what foot was coming down, if the ball was, you know, if he had full possession of the ball. I can't tell you. In that situation, my point of view is the call on the field stance.
In which case, the call on the field was a catch, touchdown. Correct. Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech wins the game.
If you called it incompletion, then you go with that. If you called the completion, then you go with that. And I agree. I don't know how they went back at the replay center. I'm honestly leaning slightly more towards a catch, because it did look like, you know, it was a catch. Now, I saw, you know, all the Instagram comments being like, well, he didn't have full possession. I mean, unless these fans are getting another angle, I didn't see that angle. So I'm going to have to say it was a catch. I don't know. It's also weird. It's like people are arguing that, oh, like the ACC needs to protect Miami and whatever, because, you know. But at the same time, it's like, then why did the refs call it an incompletion at first? So it's just all like a very weird, you know.
Yeah, I agree 100%. At least, like, don't overturn it, but at least just have the call on the field stand, because if you can't see, well, if we didn't see the best thing. I only saw that front angle where it looked like it was from like the back pylon, and it looked like a catch, but it's just there wasn't enough hardcore evidence there to overturn it, in my opinion. And also going back to what those Instagram comments saying, I feel like all that stuff is more spoken out of emotion and whatnot. It's less about, like, the facts are, if there's enough to overturn the call, then you have to have concrete proof, and there was not. I don't see any concrete proof on that play at all.
I agree.
Yeah, I don't understand or really see how, with how the rules are set up and how the rules are laid out for reviews and such that it can be overturned in that situation. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But, you know, at the end of the day, Miami came out with the win. After Cam Ward struggled in the first half, threw a couple picks. He then, you know, he threw two picks. After that, he threw for like 300 yards and three touchdowns after the second pick. So he really turned it around. And if Cam Ward is playing, you know, safe, sound football, good decision football, this Miami team is scary. If he's not and he's throwing two picks and he spots a team like Virginia Tech 14, 21 points, they're not great at playing from behind. They managed to pull it out because Cam Ward is so great. But it definitely showed a little bit of chink in Miami's armor. Moving on from last week's slate, we're going to talk a little bit. We'll just run through who we see as, you know, our top five Heisman and our top five teams. So we'll start Heisman. We'll go number one. So we'll start Will. We'll go George, and then I'll give mine. So who do you have number one winning the Heisman through 5 weeks of the season?
I have Jalen Milroe.
You have Jalen Milroe? Okay.
We're going one.
We'll go one,
two,
one,
okay.
And then
okay,
I got Ashton Jeanty.
I also have Ashton Jeanty, and so I understand Milroe a little bit purely because of last week, or just what do you see there?
I mean, I think just off of what he did against Georgia, you just brought a team, your team to a win against, you know, one of the biggest dynasties of the past, you know, few years. Obviously, Alabama being a dynasty in themselves. But also just what he was able to do, you know, completing, you know, a lot of great passes. I mean, along with obviously the heroics of Ryan Williams and such. But then also running the ball, running for touchdowns. Just, I mean, there was a lot other than Jalen Milroe that went right in that game for Alabama, obviously. But just, I mean, the way Alabama's been playing, I think, you know, you're going to look at the best player on the best team to win the Heisman. And especially if, I mean, I understand if it's, you know, there's not like a clear, you know, one guy like, you know, J.J. McCarthy or Blake Corum or Will Johnson last year. I mean, that's a little bit of a toss-up as to who's the best player on the team. But I think here, Jalen Milroe's, you know, clearly the best player on Alabama. So, I mean, you got to go give it to him.
Yeah, no, that's completely understandable. So, we'll go, who do you think is your runner-up to Jalen Milroe right now?
My runner-up is Travis Hunter.
Same.
I think Jalen Milroe is the runner-up.
You think Jalen Milroe is your runner-up? Okay, so I have Jalen Milroe as my third, taking third there. Who do you have three right now in your power rankings for the Heisman?
It's going to give it away what I say before the name, but despite that he's been out a couple of weeks, I think it's Quinn Ewers. I mean, I think to have the team decimate Michigan essentially, and then, I mean, now obviously I don't think Arch Manning is bad. I think Arch Manning is good. He's got a lot of potential, but I think the difference between Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning is showing despite the fact that Arch Manning is good. And the fact that he was able to decimate the Michigan defense like that, Michigan wasn't what they were last year, but I think also, you know, just him being their QB, you know, and the guy that ran their offense while they were number one, I think, you know, especially if he comes back and, you know, this is obviously right now, a lot could change, especially they're playing Oklahoma and Georgia in the coming weeks. But I think if he's able to get them back on track, especially if they win both of those games, he's going to have a good argument for the Heisman.
Yeah, Mine is a toss up between three people, but
all right.
for third it's Travis Hunter, Cam Ward, and Quinn Ewers.
All right,
but
so
I gotta give it to Travis Hunter.
You gotta give it to Travis Hunter. Yep. I have Cam Ward as my fourth guy.
I have Cam Ward as my fourth guy.
And then you have
fourth.
You have him fourth as well. My fifth guy, actually, just because I wanted to give him a shout out, is Jeremiah Smith, true freshman receiver from Ohio State. I think he's been a little bit better than Ryan Williams, who was probably in there as my sixth guy. And it's just because he came into a team who had undisputably the best receiver core in the country, and as a true freshman has become their number one receiver. And so what he's done at Ohio State is very impressive, and as a true freshman, I just wanted to shout that out. So he's my number five Heisman.
I'm shocked that you did that, because I also had Jeremiah Smith.
Me too.
No way.
I swear to God.
Wow. All right, well, okay. Right.
I thought I had the unique one right there.
All righty.
I guess not.
Look at us. All right, so we'll run through our top five teams and then maybe give an honorable mention shout-out. I imagine these will look pretty similar. But at number one, Alabama?
Alabama.
Yep.
Alabama. Number two, Texas?
Yes.
Yep.
Number three, Ohio State?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Number four,
Tennessee.
I would say
Tennessee, but I got to give a little shout out to Georgia. I think Georgia could have it.
I have Georgia as my number four. Tennessee is my five.
Oregon is my five.
You have Oregon.
Me too.
And I actually down here I have Tennessee and Oregon tied for fifth.
Okay.
Because you know the AP.
Oh yeah. The
loves to tie people for some reason, as we saw with number 25 this week, UNLV and A&M both being 25. Not really sure how that works, but I did also want to give an honorable mention. I have Miami as my seventh team.
Okay. My honorable mention is going to go to Georgia.
Georgia?
I think, you know, obviously, Alabama's a tough team. You know, you're going to sometimes just the way the ball rolls. And, you know, unfortunately for Georgia, and that first half cost them.
I got to give it to Penn State or Miami because I think both those teams have the depth and have the talent to.
I think the Penn State shot is interesting. I just don't know if I've seen enough yet from Penn State.
I agree. And I actually was going to. I mean, we won't go full into the game against Illinois, but I think just the fact that it went so down to the wire and the fact that they struggled against Bowling Green early on this season, I think they could be overrated. I don't know.
I think Illinois is a very good team. I think Luke Altmyer is an underrated quarterback. And obviously, as you know, Illinois is the number 24 team in the country right now. But for a team like Penn State to, you know, a Big Ten matchup, I'm not overly impressed with the Big Ten this year outside of Ohio State and Oregon.
I mean, yeah. No, I agree with that. You know, Penn State and Michigan are still good, but I think until they get tested by one of those two teams, I forgot who's coming up against them first. But
USC and Ohio State.
Okay, so until they get tested by... Because I know I'm going to their whiteout game against Washington and Ohio State's the week before. But until then, I don't really... I'm not going to put my money on them, you know, making it past, you know, one game in the playoffs. I just, again, like you, Barrett, I don't see it just yet.
Yeah.
Well, I agree with you guys, but I'm usually the number one biggest Penn State's a fraud, but I could see them winning a game in the playoffs, definitely.
Yeah, I'm a big Drew Aller's a fraud guy. I mean, if anyone who listened into that week one episode, I went on like a 15-minute tirade against Drew Aller, so... And, you know, I hate, like, every quarterback in the country as well, so.
You just don't like quarterbacks?
I just don't think the quarterback talent is that great. I'm a big Cam Ward guy, big Jalen Milroe guy, big Quinn Ewers, and a big Carson Beck guy, but everyone else, I think, is
Beck is
awesome.
Overrated.
I said this 100%. Almost,
I said
definitely.
This before. Beck is so overrated, and no. this will get so exposed when he makes it to the NFL. He will get drafted, for sure, first or second round at the latest, probably, but quickly he's going to be shown as a fraud. And I'm going to point to all these College Gridiron episodes where I said this, and I'll be like, listen, I said it here first.
You know who he reminds you? He reminds you of Mac Jones.
And all right, well, Mac Jones won a national title.
I'm talking about as per talent-wise, like, the NFL talent is not there.
Well, I mean, it doesn't really matter. We're talking about college football. I don't really care what you do in the NFL, right? Johnny Manziel is one of the greatest college football quarterbacks of all time, and what did that guy do in the NFL?
I see Carson Beck as a fraud. He's not interesting. He's not as good as people put him up to be.
Well, we'll move on from our recaps of last week and move into what we got this week, which is an interesting slate. Maybe not the best slate, maybe not the most entertaining slate all the way bottom to top, but there's definitely some interesting games in there. We'll start with one that we actually have on Friday at 9 o'clock. We have Syracuse at UNLV, who UNLV is 6.5-point favorites in that game. Freshly ranked UNLV. New starting quarterback UNLV. What are our thoughts on that game?
I know we're going to speak about our super dogs, but I think Syracuse is. Let me just check to make sure. Yeah, they are 6.5-point underdogs. I mean, I guess I'll reveal my super dog pick early. It's going to be Syracuse. I think they have, you know, a lot going for them, especially transitioning from last year. UNLV is not a bad team for sure, but I think they're, you know, obviously they have a little bit of chaos going on, and, you know, obviously Syracuse having a quarterback that came from Ohio State and getting a new coach, I think, you know, a lot of things are trending in the right direction for them. They did make some mistakes last week with, why am I blanking on his name? Shoot, their QB who played for Ohio State.
Kyle McCord?
Kyle McCord, there you go. Threw a couple picks last week. Not exactly the best look, but I think they'll get the job done against UNLV.
I actually happen to agree with you. UNLV is in shambles right now, so I don't see them being able to to, like, I don't see them being able to, like, dominate as they should. But I could see Syracuse taking over and running the game. But I don't know. It's kind of 50-50 to me.
Yeah, I think Syracuse -6.5 is kind of a crazy line. But UNLV with Malik
No, it's Syracuse +6.5.
Yeah, +6.5. Sorry. But UNLV with Malik Hodge-Williams last week looked like a top 20 offense in the country. They looked like an absolute machine. So I kind of see where they're coming from. Maybe a little bit of Vegas bias. I don't think that's a real thing. But hey, who knows? Who knows? But just like y'all, I like Syracuse in this game. I think it's a one-score game, pretty close. I like Syracuse 26-17, we'll say. You know, low scoring, close game. But I think the experience and the talent level of Syracuse, who I was very high on coming into the season as a dark horse ACC team, I think the experience and the talent of Syracuse just overpowers UNLV on Friday. Our next game will be the noon kickoff, the only ranked game of the slate this week, number 9 Mizzou at number 25 Texas A&M, who are somehow 2.5-point favorites at home.
That's what?
That's crazy.
Against Mizzou, yep. They did. Vegas did the same thing. They were 2.5. A&M was 2.5-point favorites against Notre Dame as well, which A&M was barely ranked this week, going against a top 10 team in the country and are somehow favorites. I'm not really sure where that math comes from, but A&M is 3-0 in SEC play. If they win this game, they're on track for an outside shot of the playoff. It's an interesting matchup. You know, there's a bit of a quarterback controversy down in College Station right now. Who's going to start? Is Connor Wigman healthy? Is Connor Wigman good? Who knows? Mizzou is talking a lot of trash about the environment there, so it seems like Kyle Field's going to show up. Who knows? I don't think Mizzou is quite as good as they were last year. I think without Cody Schrader, this team is missing that dynamic anything out of the backfield. It seems a little bit off from this year, but Drink's a great coach. Brady Cook's a great quarterback. What are we seeing this week in this only ranked matchup of the week?
I think it's going to be fairly low scoring. I think Missouri's going to walk out on top, though. I don't see too much in A&M. Missouri, I think it's possible they're overrated. I don't think we've seen them tested enough to know for sure, but I do think that at this point in time, they are better than Texas A&M.
Yeah, I agree fully. I think Missouri comes out with the win. I think it's gonna be a close game. I agree, low scoring, but the reason I think Vegas put that line down was because they're coming off of that double overtime win versus Vanderbilt, which is kind of scary for Missouri to have to go to double overtime with Vandy. But
I don't know, Vandy's actually a decent team this year. I will say that.
I agree, but I also think that A&M is a better team than Vanderbilt.
Oh, for sure.
Which is why I'll give Vegas that close line. I don't think that Missouri should be the underdogs at all, but
yeah.
But I can understand the line.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go a little bit against the grain. I guess agree with Vegas a little bit here, and I do have A&M over Missouri 31-24, which I think is an interesting take, but I think there's a little bit of desire and fire in this A&M team. So we'll see. Although get blown out and, you know, it'll be the same old A&M. Who knows? Our next game we're going to talk about is a little bit of an interesting one in BC at Virginia. An interesting one because the ACC looks a little bit wide open right now in everyone behind Miami, right? Like, someone else is going to have to make the playoff out of the ACC. It's probably going to be Clemson, but, you know, BC's been playing very well. Virginia is also playing very well. BC has a little bit more experience quarterback. Virginia has a young quarterback who's looked quite good. Bill O'Brien has the boys in Boston looking really good. It's an interesting game. Maybe not, you know, super flashy or stand out to anyone, but it's a game that I think could be end up being one of the better ones of the weekend slate.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could be competitive, but I don't think it's going to be too competitive. I do think Boston College wins by a decent amount here, probably around.
Virginia is actually 1-point favorites in this game.
Yeah, I know that, but that to me that's insane. I mean, especially
I think it's just close talent-wise.
They got beat by two touchdowns by Maryland.
Virginia at home. Maryland, you know, Big Ten team, decent team.
I don't know.
Have one of the best receivers in the country.
I got to go with Boston College. I don't see this being a very close game.
Yeah, I got to give it to BC.
Yeah, I also have BC.
It's really pretty.
They only lost to Missouri by six.
Yeah, BC is a good team. Thomas Castellanos is quite good. Finally coming into his own. Billy OB is a beast over there. I got BC 24-10, low scoring affair.
I like that scoreline
in Virginia this weekend. Now, my personal game of the weekend. Rutgers at Nebraska, Saturday at 4 o'clock. Nebraska is 7-point favorites. Rutgers arguably should be ranked. They are not. Nebraska is one of the more fun teams in the country with a baby Mahomes. We're in for a good one here in Nebraska. What are we seeing? What are we seeing in this game, huh?
I think this one's going to be pretty close. This one's kind of a toss-up. Both teams have had, you know, they've had flashes of something great, and then times when they're not looking as good this season. Gosh, this is a really tough.
This
pick.
Is a tough one. Yeah, I mean,
I'm gonna go with Nebraska in a really close game.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the line right now. It's +7 Rutgers, and
+7 Rutgers.
Okay. And. As a New York boy, I gotta side with Jersey here. I think Rutgers got it.
A New York boy side with the two
tri-state area. Okay. We're in the vicinity.
I'm gonna agree with George here. Actually, I mean Rutgers has one of the best offensive lines in the country according to PFF. Actually, I think the top offensive line according to PFF in the country. Kyle Monahan is a beast at the running back position. Very well coached team. Honestly, on both sides, both teams are very well coached. I have Rutgers edging this one out 37-26 in a bit of a shootout. Late score Rutgers, you know. Rutgers, it'll like 30-26 with 3 minutes left, and Rutgers gets a score to, you know, make it look a little bit worse than it was. Close game, good game all around. But Rutgers coming out 37-26 is what I have. Into one that could be a good game, could be the worst game you've ever seen. It could be 75-2. We have No. 4 Tennessee at Arkansas Saturday at 7:30. Tennessee is one of the best offenses in the country, maybe the best, depending on how you want to look at it. Arkansas is not very good. If Arkansas cannot run the ball, they will not win. Tennessee has a top 5 run defense in the country. So, 13 points. Tennessee is -13 in this game. I could easily see it being 25+.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. We really don't know too much of what to expect. Arkansas has... They've had some decent wins, nothing too crazy. The games where they did lose, they've all been close, so give them credit for that.
The A&M game is a bit of a mirage because in the last three quarters of that game, they had, I think, 120 yards in the last three quarters.
Okay.
They got out early, they started hot against A&M, and then, oh boy, they looked horrible for the last three quarters.
I mean, they did take Oklahoma State to overtime.
I think Oklahoma State's not very good either.
I mean, I think Oklahoma State's they're not that bad. They're not great, but they're not.
Ollie Gordon has looked not good this year. Alan Bowman is not good. They just lost to Kansas State by a lot.
I'm gonna go with Tennessee by about 18-ish points.
18.
I agree. Something around the 3-4, 3-3 touchdown range. I could see Tennessee taking that.
Yeah, I got Tennessee 42-20 is what I got written down here.
Okay, so we're all in the same ballpark.
Yeah, you know, that 20-25, 3-touchdown-ish range. And then finally our nightcap, the college game day, game of the week. We have No. 8 Miami going to Berkeley at Cal. Miami's 10-point favorites, 10:30, a little bit of ACC after dark action. What are we seeing? I'm seeing on Twitter a lot of people are calling it the Coke versus woke game, the communist versus convicts game. A lot of interest. I don't know how much y'all are on Twitter, but Cal Twitter is one of the greatest places of all time. They are awesome. Before that Florida State game, they had me fully believing Cal was going to go into Florida State and run them out of the building.
I mean, Florida State's look like trash this year. So.
Florida State's horrible. That's why we're talking about Miami and not Florida State playing this weekend.
I mean, otherwise, Florida State might be in the conversation for being, you know, in that fourth spot or something going into the playoffs. I don't I don't think this – I don't know who said that this should be – you said game of the week?
It's where College Game Day is this week.
Okay. I mean, this is going to be nothing like a game of the week. I think Miami's going to blow out Cal.
100%.
I mean, they lost to freaking Florida State, you know, barely beat Auburn by a touchdown. So I don't see this being close at all. I think this is going to be around a 27-point to even upwards of 30, 34, 35-point blowout.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. I think Cam Ward's going to walk in there. He's going to do his thing, and they're going to walk out up by 30. That's the only way I see it.
Yeah, I could definitely see where that how we could get to that point. I actually have written down here 38-24 for Miami. I think Cal's going to get a couple early. It'll be like 14-14 at half or something like that.
Very generous.
It'll be a close game at half, and then Cam Ward's going to, you know, nonchalantly run for like 57 yards and a touchdown in the first 2 minutes of the second half, and then all of a sudden the game's over. And then, you know, Cal will get a late touchdown. But 38-24 is my prediction here. Finally, we will actually talk about the Michigan versus Washington game, which I think is an interesting one because in our preseason show in which we did our predictions, I said Washington was my dark horse to win the Big Ten. My dark horse to win the Big Ten. Because, just hear me out, good team, very good team. It was less so to win the Big Ten and more to make the playoff as the number two Big Ten team because I didn't think they were going to beat Ohio State. But I did it a little bit for the take. We were throwing dark horses. Everyone's dark horse was like, oh, my dark horse is Michigan. That's boring.
What?
I was like, that was
That's
boring.
Not a dark horse.
Yeah, that was boring. So I went real dark horse in our prediction show. I went Washington. I thought they were going to be good this year. They haven't looked great. Will Rogers looks a little bit more like he did last year than he did his first 2 years at Mississippi State. Because his first 2 years at Mississippi State, I mean, he was the greatest Mississippi State quarterback in history. Got a new coach last year for some sadder circumstances, but got a new coach last year, looked bad. He's now this year, Jed Fish, I thought he was a very good coach. Just Washington has not seemed to have it this year. Michigan is maybe the worst team to watch in the country because they literally do not have a quarterback, and it's no matter who they start, whether it's Davis Warren or Alex Orji, just it looks horrible and ugly. So, important Big Ten game, ugly Big Ten game. Who knows what's going to happen? Maybe Alex Orji throws for more than 80 yards. I doubt it. But what are we seeing in this game?
I think Michigan is a decent defense, you know, at least if they don't have a QB. And I think this is just like, this is just the thing where, yes, it's a championship rematch, but both teams are so different. You know, obviously Washington losing, you know, Michael Penix, Romo Odunze, losing Kalen DeBoer, and then Michigan losing J.J. McCarthy, Blake Corman, Jim Harbaugh. I think it's, okay, listen, Washington has the potential for an upset. I think they do in this championship rematch. But at the same time, I do see Michigan walking out with a double-digit win.
Yeah, it is one where it's like it's either going to be close for Washington or Michigan's going to blow them out.
No, I don't think Michigan's going to blow them out.
I think a 2-17, you know, 14-17 point, not really close-looking game.
You consider that a blowout?
I do under circumstances. Like, if it's 17 and Michigan's just in charge and they kind of coast in the fourth quarter, then yeah, I would say. You know, like, if it's 37-20 and, you know, Michigan has the ball for, like, 20 minutes in the second half, and it's just not really close looking, then yeah, I would say it's a blowout. Okay. Like, Michigan is either going to win convincingly, we'll say, maybe not a blowout, but a convincing win,
yeah,
or it's going to be close, you know, 4-7 points for Washington.
Yeah, yeah. I see Michigan rolling with this game. I really don't see the hype behind Washington. I know there's not much right now, but I really don't see much hype around Washington's team right now.
Yep, well, you know, a little hurts my soul because I was pretty high on them coming into the season. But I did also say they're either going to be really good or really, really bad. And it's leading into my take that Kalen DeBoer is the best coach in the country even more because he leaves Washington. Washington looks bad. He goes to Bama, and it looks like they are, you know, early Nick Saban days reincarnated.
Just like you just spawned in another Nick Saban.
Exactly. I mean, Kalen DeBoer, I think, is the best coach in the country. He outcoached Kirby Smart. He's looked great. But that will wrap it up for our week six slate. We'll go into our little bit of our weekly segment, giving all of y'all, which y'all love, the dogs, the super dogs. So Will did mention his a little bit earlier, so we'll go to you first to give us some of your rationale and explanation for it.
I mean, as I said, I think Syracuse, they have Kyle McCord, Fran Brown. They have, you know, a core to build around. They're trending upwards. And I think UNLV, on the other hand, they're just kind of, you know, to paraphrase, in a little bit of a poop storm right now. And I just don't know exactly how, I mean, they're ranked right now. I don't think that's going to continue very long. I mean, Syracuse just needs to work on their consistency, because they've had times where they look like a juggernaut and times where they just look like garbage. So, I mean, if they play consistently well, as, you know, they could be a ranked team. So, to me, it's just, I think Syracuse wins by about 10 points. I'm going to go with that.
And what was that spread, 7?
Yeah.
7. What do you got, George?
I got an interesting one. I have Minnesota taking down USC.
Ooh, I like that one.
That line is USC minus 8. I really haven't been super high on USC this year, I'm going to be honest. They've looked good, but they've also had flashes of weakness. And I think this is going to be one of those games that Minnesota could take them down.
I like that. My dog is a bit of an obscure one. You know, maybe a game no one really cares about. It is Purdue at Wisconsin plus 14. Two-score underdogs Purdue is right now. And granted, they have not looked great recently. But they have a new offensive coordinator just this week. Hudson Card is an experienced quarterback. He's got experience everywhere, really. You know, started his career at UT. He's got potential. They have some weapons that they can utilize on offense. The defense is a decent enough defense. But it's less so because of Purdue. Well, it's the fire Purdue's going to have under a new offensive coordinator. But it's also the fact that UW has just not looked good. Wisconsin has lost 2 in a row. They're 2-2. One of their wins was also against South Dakota State. So I discount that a little bit. And so a 14-point spread is one I cannot justify in this game. So Purdue at Wisconsin. Purdue is my super dog for the week.
Time out. Hold on. Before you end this, I have another super dog.
Okay, let's hear it.
I'm going with Duke over Georgia Tech.
Duke over Georgia Tech. What's this?
I know Duke has been embroiled in a couple close games, you know, Northwestern, UConn, UNC, not top teams by any means, but they are undefeated, and Georgia Tech has been, you know, they've lost to Syracuse, lost to Louisville. Those are good teams, but it's a little bit up and down. I could see Duke for sure pulling out an upset. I'm not as confident in them as I am in Syracuse, but listen, they look good in that second half against UNC, so.
Yep. Former Texas quarterback versus a former Texas A&M quarterback. A little bit of rivalry there, maybe. Who knows? But that will be all that we have for this week 6 episode of College Gridiron. I am here with Will Jing and George Sfugatakis. In the booth was Bradley Byrne. We are an exclusive production of WFUV Sports. This has been week 6 of College Gridiron.